You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I'm your host, Adam Miller, and today we are joined by Chip Ingram, who is the founder of a radio ministry called Living on the Edge, as well as the author of many great books, including his latest, Why I Believe: Straight Answers to Honest Questions About God, the Bible, and Christianity. It's a privilege to have a veteran of Christian radio on the broadcast with us today. Chip, thank you so much for being a part of the many voices for that one message.
Well, thanks, Adam. It's great to be with you.
Why don't you get started by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background? You're a pastor, an author, and a radio host of some great Bible teaching. So tell us a little bit about you, your background, and your passion for ministry.
Sure. Well, I did not grow up as a believer. I grew up in a pretty social church where everyone agreed that no one takes this seriously, and got disillusioned and thought, I don't know if even God exists. And my dream was to play college basketball and get a scholarship, and I did. And just before I left, the coach paid my way to a Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp, and I had never read the Bible, never opened it for myself. And I saw genuine life and love, and it piqued my curiosity, and I decided I would read the New Testament and examine it for myself with an open mind. And then I, after college, played ball, came to Christ shortly after that, and then played basketball throughout South America and the Orient on some Christian teams, and saw a world of such need that, you know, I just thought anyone in ministry was way smarter than me and way more holy. And I just saw such need that if you just cared, God could use anybody, even me. And so I came back, I taught school and coached for a while, and then married and ended up called into full-time ministry, which I never dreamed. And my wife, Teresa, we have 4 grown kids and 12 grandkids. And so the journey was in a little church of 35 people in rural Texas that was a culture very different. And then from there to Santa Cruz with a culture that was the opposite extreme. Santa Cruz kind of thinks Berkeley's a little too far right. And it's a quite unusual place. All the hippies who didn't know the 60s left, but we loved it. And God did a miracle there. I mean, a church from, you know, a few hundred people went to thousands of people. And as a result, we just ran out of room, and a businessman put the message on radio, and kind of the rest is history. So I feel like I'm more of a regular guy who's sort of a teacher and a coach. My parents were coach, a skeptic at heart, really turned off by Christians who didn't live the life, and have just found myself in very kind of down-to-earth ministries where let's love people, let's feed the poor, let's take the Bible seriously, let's do community. And I probably teach more like a basketball coach than a preacher, and it seems that people resonate with just a regular guy. So that has been the journey. My wife did not grow up as a Christian either. Both of us come from alcoholic families. So I think it's actually been, Adam, you know, we just thought, God, if God can help people messed up like us and pull a family together, and then maybe he could help anyone. And so that's been our journey, and he's been super gracious. My kids have grown up to marry well and walk with God. And so we're a first generation. It's all new to us, and we're so grateful. God has made such a difference, our relationship with Christ, and just every area of our life.
Our theme for this year has been Psalm 107, verse 2, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so." And you tell your story and your testimony as someone who's had a life transformed, and your ministry is built upon helping people live out that transformed life. Have you seen your own testimony, your own walk with Christ has been the fuel for your ministry and the work that you do?
You know, it really has. I mean, my dad was a good guy, but went into World War II at 16 and a half, saw horrendous things, Purple Heart, Marine. And, you know, so life was about performance and being successful. And God radically changed my life. My wife came from a really difficult home situation. And out of that, we both came to Christ as adults, you know, for me, late teens, hers early 20s. And we came to, none of us had read the Bible, and this forgiveness and love and transformation we wanted it for others, and we just saw God's power at work, that, you know, a marriage could be deep and wonderful and rich, and we didn't know how to be parents. And as people saw the change in our life, first by how we lived, and then we verbally shared with them, not in a pushy or preachy, it was more, this is real. I mean, we're made. God made us. He loves us. Christ came. He forgave us. And so that has really been the foundation, I think, of our ministry. And rather than in any way projecting we've got it all together, I think it's been a sense of we're on the journey. We certainly have our issues. We've been pretty open about what they are. We really desperately needed marriage counseling. We've had some big bumps, but, you know, God loves people that have issues and struggles, and that's why he saved us. So, yeah, I think it's been the fuel for what he's done in us and through us. I don't think people are looking for perfect people. I think they're looking for real people with real hope that isn't some sort of sham, not some sort of sales pitch. And unfortunately, I mean, I rejected Christianity because of the kind of Christians I was exposed to. And looking back, they probably were not Christians, but they were religious. And so I think when people meet real, authentic people, trusting God, God does great stuff.
You talk about your story and your testimony as someone who is personally related to the redemptive power of Jesus Christ. You've seen it work, and that's given you the fuel then to go on and do the work in the ministry that you've done. Does that also inspire the people, as you mentioned, that they're looking for real human beings, not these, you know, pristine Christians, but people that have actually experienced and tasted the grace of God? That's really what is the fuel for why you believe and why you want others to believe.
And I think there's something a bit missing. You know, we're living in a very, you know, was it a year ago or two, the dictionary added a new word, post-truth. I mean, do the math on that one. But we are living in a world where it used to be you needed to, you know, to give a rational explanation for your faith. And now, you know, relative truth and everyone's truth is equal, and you know, you have your truth, I have mine, believe whatever you want. What I've seen is that people desperately need to see the life lived out. And it has to be accompanied by a verbal testimony of why you live the way you live. But in 1 Peter 3:15, it says that we should be ready to give a reason, but for the hope that's in us. But if you back that up, it's because they were living holy lives in chapter one. It's because they radically loved one another. It's because that even when they were slandered and people were persecuting them, they responded in kindness. They gave good for evil. So I think one of the greatest testimonies, especially in America in our day, is how do we respond when we're thought of negatively? And if anything, I just call Christians to stop saying things on your Facebook and stop lashing out. We're not at war with people that don't know Christ. They are victims and prisoners, and they are blinded by the enemy. Doesn't mean we agree and we don't compromise, but it is the kindness of God that leads to repentance. I've lived and done ministry here in California, that less than 3% in the Bay Area know Christ personally. And it's radically anti, quote, God or Christ. But what I found is when you love people, when you listen to them, when, you know, the people listening, you know, bring in bagels, ask them how they're doing. In crisis, ask if you can pray. There is very little competition for really authentically caring and loving people. And as you do, they will ask about the hope that's in you. And then I think every Christian needs to be able to clearly articulate, this is my story. This is what Christ has done. This is the difference. And here's how you can have a relationship with him as well.
I appreciate how you approach the issue of apologetics with a personal relationship, that you have experienced the grace of God, and that is the foundation of why you believe. But we live in a world of reason and a world of skepticism, and you've mentioned that you have that as a kind of background to you. Why would you believe in a God of the Bible in a world that seems to offer all the answers to all of the immediate things that we need? Why is it so important that we have an understanding of the God of the Bible?
Well, I think, you know, if you push things and ask people, you know, where I live, they're from all over the world. And so why do you believe that? What's that based on? We're living in a world where people have made up their own gods, and they choose from, you know, I'll take a little Christianity, a slice of Judaism, maybe a little Buddhism, a little reincarnation over here. And in essence, people in America especially have, I'm spiritual now, or now they create a god of their own making. And for me, I am pretty logical, and I didn't believe in the God of the Bible. So when I began to explore the scriptures, I needed to know, are they reliable? And these aren't stories. There's archaeological background. You can verify the places. Jesus was a historical person. There was over 500 eyewitnesses of the resurrection. The places in the Bible, you can go and visit those places. And then just the whole logic of not only the Bible, but what is the strongest and best philosophical reasons for evil in the world and suffering in the world? The world that we're in is not the world that God desired. There was a fall. There's sin. Every single religious system can be defined by two letters, D-O, do, do, do. And you name the system or the cult. If I do, 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 pray so many times a day, give so much, do this, on and on and on and on. But it's a works to get to a God. Only Christianity, only the person of Christ can be defined in four letters, D-O-N-E, done. God has done for us. The uniqueness is grace. God has done for us what we can't do for ourselves. And it brings about radical transformation, not a continual external morality or trying to become by our own effort just a better person. So, you know, because of my background, I went to, you know, I've had, I think, 7 years of graduate work after college. I've investigated life after death, creation, evolution, the Bible, different religions and philosophies. And as I've done that, I'm not going to throw my brains in the trash. And, you know, I've been in graduate programs in all secular universities grappling with these things. And I remember sitting in front of three doctors asking me all those questions that people ask about Christianity, and having done the research kindly, lovingly, and without argument, giving them answers, and watching brilliant people turn to me and say, you know, I never knew that. I never understood that. You know, we're told to give an answer with respect and with gentleness, but we also need to be able to give an answer. And so the little book that I wrote on why I believe is sort of a product of 30 years of research, but rather than lots of just content, it's how do I sit with a cup of coffee with a family member or a friend without attacking them and give them the kind of answers that make sense in a way that they can understand. And that's kind of been my dream and what God has done in California all these years. And we wanted to make that available to help other people.
One of the ideas of the importance of knowing these answers is to know that we're not believing some fairy tale, right? Our faith is not based on a vacuum. It's based on a world that God created with real world laws of science and everything else. So there's a way in which we can understand how God works logically, and there's logical answers to all these things that can be an reinforcement to our faith, not the confirmation of it or the sustainer of our faith, but it can really be a help, can it?
Well, I came to the point where I had an amazing life-transforming experience in college. You know, I was an unbeliever, came to Christ personally in the summer before I left the college. And then the next 3 or 4 years was just friendships and love and growth and character development. And just before I was ready to graduate, the chairman of the department, I really esteemed him. And I certainly wasn't the smartest guy, but I was a really good student. So I got all A's in my major. And he was going to, you know, kind of waiting, I think, to ask me this question. He was brilliant. I looked up to him, and he was a good student. And he said, Chip, you know, you're going to walk across the stage in a couple of days and, you know, academics is over and you've graduated with honors and all the rest. But I have a question for you that's really bugged me. I said, well, what's that? And we called him Dr. P. And he said, how can someone that seems, as intellectually astute as you are, actually believe in a literal Jesus and the Bible and all this born-again stuff. And he wasn't condemning. It was almost like this professor who loved a student and basically was saying, don't waste your life with this religious stuff. I just don't get it. And he said, and the president of the college happened to be, it was a secular college, was a believer as well. And he asked me some questions that I didn't have good answers for. And I remember thinking, I'm certainly not going to give up my faith because a very smart person that I respect asked me hard questions. But the other thing I made a determination, Adam, was I'm not going to throw my brains in the trash and have some emotional experience with a God that I think is there. These hard questions about the Bible, about science, they need to have good answers. And I believe God has made us in his image. So life is logical. It is strategic. It is clear. The planets revolve in order. I mean, it's amazing how God has made things. And so that was my journey to go through and answer and find the answers to those that are intellectually feasible and have integrity. What I found is, in the words of G.K. Chesterton, he said, Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. Genuine Christianity has rarely been tried. And I think that's the case for many Americans. They have a pseudo-Christianity, a religion. They've heard, oh, you can't believe the Bible, or that doesn't make sense. And yet, with eternity at stake, they've never examined it for themselves. That was what I think is the key, to really ask yourself, what happens after I die? Is there a God? Is the Bible trustworthy? And to have an open mind. And I encourage people all the time, just read the New Testament. The world, life history, revolves around one unique person, B.C., A.D., our laws, our future, context, culture. I mean, no one has made the impact in all the world as Jesus. How can you be an educated person and not read the New Testament documents that are historical and at least examine, who is he? Is this believable? And I find when people do that with an open mind, amazing things happen.
Your subtitle here is Straight Answers to Honest Questions About God, the Bible, and Christianity, and it kind of addresses two really key components here. First of all, these are honest questions, people that are trying to grapple with faith and what they have been taught or with reality, as well as giving straight answers, not beating around the bush or trying to dodge them. Why is it so important to have these sort of conversations with unbelievers, but with young people and believers as well, so that we understand that our faith is well-grounded?
I think because, like never before, our faith is under attack. If you're a college student who comes from, let's say, a good Christian home, and you have personally received Christ, and if you go away, especially to a secular college, and now some even other colleges, and your first two or three semesters, people tell you, you're anti-intellectual. How can you believe that? Everyone's sleeping around, everyone's doing this, everyone's doing that. All of a sudden, if all you have is an intellectual belief and not convictions, if you don't know why you believe what you believe, it will not be long before your life and your lifestyle will go through a major shift. In many ways, I wrote this book. It's an apologetics book, but I wrote it for Christians. You know, there's very big, thick books by brilliant, brilliant people, of the Josh McDowells and Ravi Zacharias and J.P. Moreland and D.A. Carlson and people that I've read. But what I thought was, who helps sort of that Christian person that doesn't, you know, I just went through with my arm around people and said, I don't know about you, but, you know, when I thought about the Bible being translated, how could we get the right one after all these years? And, you know, I sat in, you know, with the secular schools and they said, you know, evolution is true. It's a fact. And I saw these pictures and it looked like all these evolving forms. Isn't that true? No one sat down with me to say, do you understand that they made up those pictures? They've never found any transitional forms. And, you know, do you understand? I wanted to give people something where they could say, I'm not going to throw my brains in the trash, but there are real answers. And then I put a very thick bibliography so that if you want to go a lot deeper, you can. But I think, Adam, what I've found as a pastor, especially, you know, maybe on the West Coast or places like New England, where there's not very many churches and you're in a minority when you're a believer, is that what you really need to know is what you believe and have a conviction and know that intellectually you're on strong ground. And so when you do that work, and I think it's some work, it gives you a confidence to not be afraid to share your faith. If down deep, I'm afraid someone's going to ask me a question that blows everything apart. Mostly we find Christians who don't say much. When you do your work, and you don't have to have all the answers, to this day, after all these years, you know, there's all these PhDs from all over the world here. Someone will ask me a question. I'm like, wow, you know, that one I've never heard before. Could I think that one through and get back with you in a week? That's a great question. I'd love to talk with you about that. And again, a lot of it is learning, but a big part of it is, how do we respond to people and say, hey, I want to check that out. Every time we do that, I think people realize, oh, we're in a conversation. We're not in a debate. I'm here to share with you, not to prove you wrong and me right.
We've been talking with Chip Ingram, who is the pastor as well as the founder of the radio ministry Living on the Edge. And he's also the author of many great books, including this book, Why I Believe: Straight Answers to Honest Questions About God, the Bible, and Christianity. A great reminder that we have a faith that is well-grounded, and a God who is bigger than our imagination, but he is relatable to all of our needs. A great reminder, a great encouragement as we think about our witness. Chip, thank you so much for being a part of the Many Voices for That One Message, sharing your story, sharing your ministry, and also sharing this book.
Well, thanks so much. And for those that might want to even listen to that, if they can't read the book, they can go to the App Store and just type in my name, Chip Ingram. And it's the Chip Ingram app. And we've got about 20 series, including this one. They can listen to it and you know, get some encouragement for those conversations and for their own faith.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.